You are listening to Primetime. My name is Henry Shin. We're continuing our panel discussion on Greenbelt Zones, how the current government here in Korea would like to start easing some of these regulations. They want to spur economic growth through this deregulation. Environmentalists do not like this idea, but a lot of people feel that this is maybe an anachronistic regulation that is long overdue to be tweaked a bit. Give us your thoughts. You can text us at #1013 for 51. Call us at 02-778-1013 or send us a KakaoTalk message. We got a very detailed background on the issue in part one of this discussion. We're going to connect to two experts from the UK to see how the Greenbelt policy there has evolved over the years and what they're currently debating as well. But joining us once again from Dongguk University, very pleased to have joining us in the studio, Professor Kim Jung-won. Professor Kim, welcome back to the program.
Okay, thank you.
Let's talk about the government. What they're also saying, Professor Kim, is that they're going to allow city mayors and provincial governors to abolish greenbelts smaller than 300,000 square kilometers without any central government land ministry approval. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the lineage of the right of 300,000 square meter of greenbelt to the provincial governor would be practically greenbelt management is abandoned in our Korea. So on the basis of 300,000 square meter, this is quite a large scale, actually, comparatively Korean peninsula is not so big a territory to give up this environment.
Right.
And the current environmental impact could access that more than 250 square meters urban development project has a huge influence on the environment, and compared to the environmental sensitive greenbelt releases the right 300,000 square meter. It is totally gave up the role of a central government on the managing restricted area and the environmental metropolitan cities.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you say, it's de facto basically handing over the administrative regulatory policies to the local governments. We should turn our focus beyond Korea for a while, though. Korea by no means is the only country that has designated greenbelt areas to protect land from what is considered to be reckless development and investment. Very pleased to have joining us from the UK two experts to help us understand how the Greenbelt policy is being debated over there. Joining us on the line, we have the president of the Adam Smith Institute, Dr. Madsen Peary, and geography professor from Oxford University, Professor Danny Dorling. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the line.
It's good to join you.
I'd like to start with Dr. Peary. First, just get your comments on the UK's current Greenbelt policy and your thoughts on it.
Well, it is reckoned that the current UK Greenbelt policy is contributing towards a serious shortage of housing in Britain. The most of Britain is, of course, relatively undeveloped. 90% of the land is either green or water, so only a small proportion of it is actually built on. The main thing is that this designated greenbelt land is almost inviolable, and parts of it are not particularly green. For example, one third of it is prime agricultural land, which sees pesticides and herbicides and fertilizers poured onto it in order to produce monoculture, not particularly environmentally attractive or friendly to wildlife.
Professor Dorling, your thoughts?
When the greenbelt was introduced, around about 7 decades ago, it was quite a good policy because it avoided us getting US-style sprawl and having cities that were so large that you had to have cars to get between them. But you can't have a policy that you design in the 1940s and not adapt it at all. The greenbelt in the UK is now causing a lot of environmental problems. So I'm talking to you from the city of Oxford. We have a very tight greenbelt around Oxford, which results in 40,000 people every day driving over the greenbelt to park at the edge of the city to get into work, and this causes a huge amount of pollution. We also have many people jumping over the greenbelt every day to commute to get to London, and again, it causes much pollution. So the greenbelt is making the country less green. Our population has gone up a lot. We really do need to now consider the greenbelt boundary and to begin to build next to the edge of cities into the green belt so that people can get to work far easier often not involving a car, but cycling or using public transport.
Right.
Yes, this is Dr. Piri again.
Yes.
I think there's general agreement that the pressures are now mounting on the government to do something about the green belt, to either redesignate agricultural land or to designate certain areas at the edge of the green belt so that housing can be built.
Now,
yes. One thing the UK government could do is for every acre, every hectare of land which is taken out of the green belt near cities,
mm-hmm.
they could actually find a couple of acres of really good environmental land on the other side of the green belt, far away from cities, which could be designated. So you could actually make the situation far
right.
better for people and allow house building where it's needed, but also protect the really good environmental land, not the kind of scrub that we currently call green belt.
Dr. Period.
So, Dr. Yeah. Piri again here. We're looking at what is being done in South Korea and regarding it as a kind of positive step, an indicator that something can be done in another country that we might want to copy ourselves in some way.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is that you often look at, okay, the Western developed nations, they're usually a few decades ahead in terms of a lot of these policies compared to a country like Korea coming from the ashes of the Korean War, still developing, and you would think that the benchmarking should be done the other way. As in the UK, has this debate really become more of a recent phenomenon, or have you guys been wrestling with this for decades?
It's only been in the last 5 to 10 years that it's become such a phenomenon, because we've had this incredible rise in house prices in London and the South East. London is now the most expensive city to live in the world. It is more expensive than Tokyo. And it's the pressure, the fact that people simply cannot afford, well-off people cannot afford to house themselves, that has pushed this right up the political agenda.
Absolutely. It is not the cost of building houses that makes houses so expensive. It is the cost of the permission to build. That piece of paper is a very large fraction of the cost of the house.
The other thing worth saying is somebody from my particular politics would hardly ever be in agreement with somebody from the Adam Smith Institute.
Right.
But on this particular issue, things have reached such a state that the pressure is very high. The worry is, how do you change a policy so that you simply don't get rid of it entirely,
sure.
you protect what needs to be protected, and you have an efficient city plan so that people really can live relatively near to where they work and do not have to spend hours and hours a day commuting. And the danger is, if we don't think carefully about how we change the green belt, we could end up creating dormitory towns in the middle of what was the green belt and filling our roads with yet more cars, and that wouldn't necessarily make people better off.
I want to turn the conversation to Professor Kim Jung-won. He's joining me here in the studio. Professor Kim, you've heard what our experts had to say. Interesting that there is some bipartisan agreement there as well, as in terms of the green belt deregulation issue. They also mentioned the importance of how housing has become such a major problem, especially in London. Here in Korea, we have that exact same problem with Seoul. Many people who are relatively well-to-do just finding it difficult to afford any decent housing in the city. Do you think Korea's housing crisis can also be eased? Do you think easing green belt regulations will actually help the real estate market here in Korea?
So actually, for me, I'm very positive on the housing problem. Actually, in the housing crisis already finished in Korea, I think. As the supply of apartment house access the demand the last 5 years, only meant there are a big gap between the rich and poor.
Mm-hmm.
And more of the capital investment on factory will be concentrated in the metropolitan city area, Seoul and Gyeonggi province only. And so I think local area corporate structure could not be attracted even under the deregulation. And the green belt up is tempting just most real estate speculator and the reckless development by them only Seoul area.
Right.
And some speculator already tried to take an advantage to concentrate and concerned about the property speculation. And during the process of developing green belt, it's a land belt rights and speculation that has side effect. So, definitely, I think.
Right. To our experts from the UK, Dr. Piri, do we worry about speculation and reckless development over in the UK as well?
Well, I think you move in such a way that doesn't happen. You need to do this in an orderly way, as my colleague from Oxford said. You don't want it so that the whole structure of the green belt suddenly collapses and it is open to people like speculators, mm-hmm. if you do it in a systematic, ordered way with a plan that secures widespread agreement across the political spectrum.
Professor Dorling?
I agree. This is a very, very sensitive issue in Britain. A lot of people really like the green belt, and so changing the policy will be hard anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be amazed if we change the policy and allow speculation, because you'd end up with houses being built with space between them, with space for two or three cars,
right.
And this wouldn't solve the housing problem for many people. We probably need quite high-density housing near the edge of cities built on the green belt with very good views, and particularly for people who are retiring, because one problem for our housing is that we have retired couples living in large houses in cities because there is nowhere for them to move to, even if they want to move to a smaller property, and they often want to stay near their friends. So if we could free up land to build retirement apartments for the elderly, that would create an enormous amount of space in our housing system, because so much of our housing is being used inefficiently at the moment.
Interesting. Now, just like in Korea, I imagine, and this is pretty much universal, that the resistance, a lot of that would come from environmentalists, people who do want to see a large portion of the land protected, perhaps rightly so, even if it is maybe done in an inefficient manner as it is now, if that's the consensus with these current Greenbelt regulations. Dr. Perry, how is the debate going on with concerned environmentalists in the UK?
The debate has only just begun, but the solution, this is a solvable problem, because the agricultural land within the green belt is not particularly friendly to the environment.
Mm.
A lot of chemicals are used on it. There's quite a lot of pollution, and the main thing in Britain would be to make sure that the genuinely green land, that is the fields and woods and the rural habitat, is protected. And once you can reassure people that the green belt will be no less green, then I think you might be able to get a broad measure of support, even from environmentalists. Mm.
Professor Darling, are you similarly optimistic that there can be some kind of grand consensus, some kind of agreement reached?
I am partly optimistic, not least because we have so much very high-quality environmental land that isn't in the green belt, so we'd actually have a far better policy if we looked at it carefully. And this agricultural land really isn't green, and if it's near a city, it doesn't need to be agricultural land. However, I'm pessimistic because the most powerful political force in Britain is what's called the force of NIMBYism.
Mm.
This means not in my backyard.
Right.
And you would be amazed at how much British people will galvanise themselves to stop a development of properties near where they live, particularly if they think it might reduce the value of their own homes. That's going to be very hard to overcome, because it is such a tradition in Britain to oppose houses and flats being built near where you live. And it's been quite a long time in the southeast of England since we've had new towns and housing developments, and people have forgotten that the world doesn't end when you build a few houses and flats for the people who already live in the area. Life actually becomes better, particularly as people age and they need younger people around them to help look after them. So simply sitting in your house and saying nothing can be built near it isn't going to make your life better in the long term.
Dr. Perry, we just had recent elections in the UK, surprising to some that the Tories will be in power once again. Politically speaking, is this something that is definitely on the agenda and that will be addressed in the near future?
Well, it certainly wasn't on the agenda in any of the party manifestos.
Right.
For the obvious reason that in an election manifesto, you don't put down things that will deter people from voting for you. But I think whichever party had been elected, this would have had to feature. The question of how are houses going to be built where they are needed would have had to feature in the agenda of either of the main parties.
Professor Darling, politically speaking, do you see something happening in the near future?
Yes, it'll be amazing if it doesn't happen. The government really will have no excuse because it's a single party now in power. They can't blame each other in a coalition. London can build upwards quite a lot. It has to be said that London can build up, but building out a bit would be good. But a town like Oxford, we are simply not allowed to build high-rise buildings in Oxford because of the historic views. So the only future for a city like Oxford, which requires so many people to make the universities and the hospitals work, is to breach the Green Belt. And the question is, when are the government going to be brave enough to actually say that this should be allowed, and then how carefully can it be done? But they will be seen to have failed on housing if they don't allow housing and flats to be built where the pressure of the population is so incredibly high. The market says it needs to be down here in the southeast of England. The population is rising. We've been lucky to get immigration, and that immigration in particular has tipped us to a point where we do now need to go into the Green Belt.
We will have to leave it there. I want to thank both of you for joining us. Dr. Perry, Professor Dorling, really appreciate your insights. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Dr. Madsen Perry, president of the Adam Smith Institute, as well as Professor Danny Dorling, a geography professor at Oxford University. We're certainly seeing a lot of consensus on this issue, that there is a need to at least address some of the inefficiencies of these long-standing Greenbelt policies. Just want to read a quick comment from our listener, 1982, texting us, saying, Korea is a tiny country, and using only half of it south of the demarcation line, I think we can't afford to let these green belt zones sit idly by when we have few new growth engines with this long-standing economic recession, plus climate change is destroying many parts of the world. So maybe we need more comprehensive measures to preserve the environment, because pollutants today do not recognize national borders, not alone an artificially designated green belt zone. Very good point. Thank you very much for that, 1982. Professor Kim Jung-won is here in the studio waiting very patiently as we listen to our experts from the UK. Professor Kim, so you got the thoughts from them. They seem to be fairly in agreement, and very different political views from the Adam Smith Institute and Professor Darling from Oxford. What do you think Korea can learn from UK's situation?
And I understand that they are also suffered from the housing problem in London. So I think there is a Korean local residents living in the district areas, the most opposition forces in this case, and it means the developmental district section could not be properly managed so far. So the developmental district area should properly manage it from now on, and respect their convenience to the owners. And at the same time, in the we need some discussion and the consensus on an agreement between owners and government on the significant sectors of the conflict, and the confusion will be stabilized.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how there are some similarities with Korea and the UK. Both have these housing shortage issues, skyrocketing prices in their central areas, London and Seoul, respectively. And so, and we're also seeing some, I suppose, bipartisan consensus that something does need to be done, perhaps the pace of which may be still up for debate. I suppose the one question that all of our listeners are very curious about, to get your view, Professor Kim, you've looked at the issue, you've given us your thoughts on what's going on. I guess finally, maybe a prediction, or at least a sense of, are you optimistic about the government's deregulation plans? And I asked the UK professors as well whether the politicians will actually get down to trying to address it. Is there any chance of implementing tougher regulations on the Green Belt?
So actually, first, I can say optimistic on the government policy. And basically, I perceive the Green Belt must be social properties. And one more thing, I agree on the government to do something for the benefit of the people. But you can say that every policy has a pros and cons, like coin. The territory is not only our property, but also our descendant has a right to manage it. Mm. And we must think about the beautiful environment to give them. And also, not everybody perceives that Green Belt is unnecessary regulation. This is high time to consider environment rather than last 1971. And every policy would be performed by people, so the important point is not the regulation, but the mindset of people. And therefore, landowner, public officers, and business lines, and government people should have the common sense to develop the price more efficiently.
Yeah, as we've often seen with a lot of other different policy questions, not always easy to get all those very diverse groups together to come to some sort of agreement here. We'll see what happens with the Green Belt Zones in Korea. That is all the time we have, but we certainly have learned a lot from you, Professor Kim. We do thank you for joining us and always appreciate your expertise and look forward to talking to you again, whether it is on the phone or here in the studio. Thank you very much, Professor.
Well, thank you very much.
That was Professor Kim Jung-kwan from Dongguk University.